Johnson Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM, and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. There were mostly peaceful protests across the country over the weekend after the Memphis Police Department released body cam video of Tyre Nichols beating at the hands of five officers during a traffic stop. He died 3 days later. Memphis Church Pastor Gilbert Washington.
We're praying for that young man's family, for his loved ones, for his friends. They're hurting. And we're hurting as well.
CBS's Jared Hill.
A February 17th bond arraignment hearing has been scheduled for the five ex-officers involved, according to Shelby County online court records. Each faces multiple charges, including second-degree murder.
Officials in northwestern Pakistan believe a suicide bomber targeted a mosque in Peshawar today, killing at least 27 worshippers and wounding as many as 147 others. The BBC's Caroline Davies.
A police official told the BBC that part of the mosque's wall collapsed with the force of the blast. Lady Reading Hospital in Peshawar has declared an emergency. They told the BBC that they were still receiving those injured in the explosion. Unverified images on local media show half a wall caved in. The mosque covered in bricks and debris as people clamber over the rubble to escape.
In Cairo today, camera snapping away as Secretary of State Blinken met with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. Blinken says he raised concerns about human rights issues ahead of a meeting in Jerusalem with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to discuss a new surge of Israeli-Palestinian violence. The Chiefs and the Eagles are headed to the Super Bowl.
Racing around the edge, Scott is in! Touchdown, Philadelphia!
Philly crushed the 49ers 31-7 to win the NFC Championship on Fox. Eagles coach Nick Sirianni.
This is something we all dream about, and we get to do it because, you know, we did it better than anybody else in the NFC this year.
The Chiefs beat the Bengals 23-20 to take the AFC Championship. Super Bowl 57, a week from Sunday in Glendale, Arizona. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and President Biden will go head-to-head over the nation's debt ceiling when they meet Wednesday. Republicans insist on budget cuts before they raise the borrowing limit. Speaker McCarthy telling CBS's Face the Nation.
I want to make sure we're protected in our defense spending, but I want to make sure it's effective and efficient. I want to look at every single dollar we're spending, no matter where it's being spent. I want to eliminate waste wherever it is.
The president insists negotiating over raising the debt ceiling could trigger a recession. No school today in Woburn, Massachusetts. Teachers like Eric Scarborough are on strike.
It's unfortunate that we have to do this, but you get to a point where you've been pushed too far.
S&P futures down 35. Dow futures off 205. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Do you know what people see when they Google you? Search engines don't always get it right. And when they're wrong, it's your reputation on the line. So what do you do when you don't agree with your search results? Call Reputation Defender at 800-401-6681. Reputation Defender by Norton is one of the most trusted names in online reputation repair. We have over a decade of experience in fixing people's search results, and we can help you too. Using cutting-edge approaches, Reputation Defender pushes unflattering information down to lower pages of your search results, where few people ever look. We also promote the good stuff so that it rises to the top, letting you put your best foot forward. Your good name is too valuable to leave to the whims of a Google algorithm. You owe it to yourself to take control with Reputation Defender. Visit www.reputationdefender.com or call 800-401-6681 for free advice on your situation. 800-401-6681. That's 800-401-6681.
A tree can be a warrior, battling global challenges with greater courage. A tree can be a solution, cleaning our air, supporting our communities, and protecting our wildlife. A tree can be noble, growing hope in every corner of the world. That's why now is the time for trees. Millions of trees. Join our planting movement at arborday.org.
Right arm, right leg.
Left leg, left arm.
Both legs above the knee.
Both legs, part of my left hand.
Lost both my legs in Iraq.
These 9/11 veterans are just a few of the heroes we serve at Homes for Our Troops. For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes with features like wheelchair access, roll-in showers, and pull-down cabinets that allow them to function independently and focus on their recovery and family. This life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans, thanks to our donors and supporters. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit hfotusa.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Lows around 2 above tonight under partly cloudy skies, southwest winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. A mix of clouds and sun tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 21. Partly cloudy again tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 10 above. Chance for snow Thursday with highs in the upper teens, cloudy skies Friday.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
Currently it's 7 above.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today, President Biden was front and center touting major investments in rail infrastructure. Something we desperately need. Look, you know, I spent a lot of time in rail yards. We could use, especially on the freight rail side, we could really use some investment. And passenger rail, wow, we're so far behind. We need massive investment. You want to help solve traffic problems? I don't know. Maybe some high-speed rail? That'd be a good idea. Maybe we get to that. But also today, our friends over at UE, the UE union, they've come out calling for public ownership of those rails. An interesting idea. That's why I've asked their general president, Carl Rosen, to come talk with us. Carl's the general president of the United Electrical Radio and Machine Workers of America, ueunion.org, the website. Carl, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, I'm always happy to be here with you, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
So we got the president out touting the fact that we're investing in rails. We're gonna help make rail great again. I'm thrilled about that. Something we need to do. But you're saying, hey, we should maybe reclaim those rails. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely. I mean, it is true that we need as a country to invest in rail from many points of view. The pollution around rail yards where a lot of working class people live, the impact on climate change of the combination of having old locomotives still on the rails because the rail companies aren't bothering to invest their profits in new equipment, the need to move a lot more freight off of trucks onto rail for protecting the environment, for reducing traffic congestion and accidents and wear and tear on the roads, which we all pay for as taxpayers, of course, to rebuild the roads that the trucks are pounding on the long distance runs that aren't necessary. So we really do need to invest in rail as a country. And so I'm glad to see these moves being made to rebuild these rail tunnels, and it'll put people to work, good jobs, good union jobs. Glad to see that. But why are we having to invest all this taxpayer money to help private corporations continue to make super profits and not bother investing at all in their own infrastructure that they make the money off of? They're playing the American people for suckers. And then you combine it with rail is a natural monopoly. It's like utilities. You know, it has to be regulated and even better to actually be run by the public. I mean, the best utilities in this country are the public utilities, which we've gotten away from in too many places. But in a lot of cases, we still have it, especially when you look at things like water and other things. You know, rails, you know, you're not going to have multiple railroad companies running up and down the same set of tracks and not coordinating. That just doesn't work. It's wherever they're operating, you know, they've kind of divided up the turf. They're monopolies. And we're basically as allowing our government to let them run those monopolies purely for private profit. They aren't providing services. You've got companies all over the country screaming that they can't get the goods moved. It was a major contributing factor in how the whole supply chain got mucked up at the beginning of the pandemic, directly leading to the inflation that we've been facing, fortunately finally easing off, but that we have been facing over the last year and a half. And, you know, they don't contribute anything good, these railroad companies. And then they turn around and you see what they did to their workers this past contract cycle a couple months ago. Just atrocious, because what they've done is they have cut down their number of staff so low in order to make even higher profits. Hell, they spent far more on stock buybacks this year than their entire labor bill.
Yeah, let that sink in. That's the remarkable part of all of this. I think, you know, stock buybacks is one of those things that just has me crazy in this moment. I mean, corporations, you know, the S&P 500 last year spent almost $1 trillion on stock buybacks. You know, that's money that should have been going to wages for working people. And we could spend an old day on this. But the railroads in particular, because you're right, they have slashed staff. They have cut service. They've made trains enormously long. And I would argue much more dangerous than they should be, all so they can squeeze a little bit more out. But what do you say, Carl, to the person who believes, look, you know, as bad as the companies are running things and as bad as they're doing, government would do it worse, Carl?
I say that's only because you're hearing the propaganda that's been put out there for a long time. Look at the U.S. mail system. Delivers a phenomenal amount of mail on a daily basis all over this country. And, you know, that's a public good. That's what we need to be looking at here. You look at the European countries, almost all of them have public ownership of the rails in one form or another, which also allows them to plan for the long term, invest in what they need to invest in. It's part of why they've got electric trains almost everywhere, so they aren't killing themselves with diesel fumes, because they can make those investments for the long term. And, you know, that's where the company's profit should have been going, was investing in infrastructure and upgrading for the future instead of just giving it away to their stockholders through the stock buybacks. But you're not going to get a private company to think about the long term. They're going to think about what's the next quarter look like for our stock owners. Yeah, and that's why it should be in private hands. It needs to be taken public.
Have we ever had that scenario in this country?
Well, you know, we've had different pieces of it at different times. Certainly, you know, the whole railroad industry collapsed. If you remember, we put together Conrail, which was a quasi government effort to get freight rail back on its feet. And Amtrak is... you know, is essentially a government agency, unfortunately, continually choked because they give freight precedent over it. And again, because, you know, the highway interests have made sure that we never put too much money into passenger rail. I mean, there's historical things that have happened, like when GM purposely destroyed the rail system in Los Angeles, the local rail system, to make sure that everybody had to buy cars. I mean, you know, that's what we have to fight back against as working people. We have to get back to having public goods that help all of society, that help all working people, and not everything just done for some few individuals to be able to make huge profits.
Now, my Twitter trolls would say, Carl, that you're talking about socialism, and socialism never works, Carl. That's what they've told me. It's all bad. It's all bad.
They work very hard to undermine it, but certainly socializing the most important parts of our society is the only way that we're going to progress as a human race.
Now, you brought up an interesting point about, you know, congestion and traffic. Everybody I know complains about how bad traffic is, especially truck traffic. And for me, you know, the investments of today will help alleviate some of that. And this is why I give Biden credit. At least we're moving in a direction to invest in this stuff. But I agree with you. We're investing in this stuff for some of the wrong reasons of enriching these big corporations. Is there any movement outside of your union saying, hey, you know, this doesn't make sense? Is there any legislative movement? Is there any movement of organizing going on? Is there any push for doing what you're talking about?
Sure. It's early in the process. you may have noticed that UE frequently is earlier in the process than some other unions come on board. You know, we were speaking out in the early 90s about the need to organize immigrant workers and not vilify them. And it took about 10 years and the rest of the labor movement got on board. So we're optimistic that a lot more of the union movement will come on board. But there are voices within the rail unions. There are groups of, you know, rank and file workers who are saying this is the way we need to go. And you can it's there's statements being made by various leaders. I think people were just really astonished at how rotten these railroad companies were in the course of imposing these contracts,
which sadly, how can you be how can anyone, knowing the history of the railroads, not know that robber barons, that the rail barons are some of the worst of the worst? How can you not know that?
Right. Well, and then they have, unfortunately, a Democratic administration, Democratic Congress come in behind them in imposing these terms this time around, even though I know there were a good number of Democrats led, of course, by Bernie Sanders trying to push back against it. But, you know, it's shameful what folks ended up getting stuck here without the 6 days. You know,
yeah. I saw it as a moment, Carl, that I thought Democrats could have taken advantage of and said, look, this is a moment where we need everybody to get sick days. I never thought the rail workers were going to be allowed to strike. It doesn't happen. I knew they were going to impose something of a contract, but a national call to something higher, I expected, I wanted, I had hoped for. And I didn't get, and this is where Democrats, I think, fell down on this, especially on the messaging side of saying, look, for the economy's sake, we can't let this happen, but we got to get those guys sick days. We got to get those workers sick days. We got to get everybody sick days.
That's right. That's right. That it absolutely could have gone there. You know, they had majorities in both houses at the time, you know, but they come up with excuses why they can't get anything done. That damn filibuster. Oh, my gosh. You know, just got in the way yet again. We're so sorry. It's one excuse or another, and you know, this is why people have lost faith in the Democratic Party. The Republicans don't let things hold them back when they get into office.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that we've got an ineffective Democratic Party and a Republican Party that hates working people. It's a weird moment that we're in. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Carl Rosen. Carl is the general president of the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America, UEUnion.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they're doing and their call to put railroads under public ownership. Check that out. I want to get your thoughts also. Your union's been on a roll, a completely different topic. You've been on a roll organizing. I know union density went down last year, but your union's been out there, you know, going like gangbusters. What are you doing?
Well, we're finding the workers who want to organize and helping them organize themselves is what we're doing. We're punching way above our weight. It's way beyond what you know, we could do just based on you know, the traditional, very staff intensive model of organizing. We're putting the power right in the workers' hands, and who's especially interested in doing this are younger workers, folks who have come of age in the working class since the turn of the century. They realize this system is not working for them, and the government's not going to fix it, and the big business isn't going to fix it. They're going to have to fix it themselves by organizing. And so, you know, we're finding places where there's just a tremendous response. And one area, and we organize in all kinds of sectors. So we've got organizing going on in manufacturing, in the service sector, in government subcontractors, et cetera. But one area we're having a lot of success right now is graduate workers at major universities who are it's research assistants as well as teaching assistants. Historically, research assistants were hard to organize, because of the nature of their work and the expectation of where they were going to be going and what their futures look like. And all of that's changed as the academic institutions have, reduced the number of quality jobs there. And then as they see what's happening with big business. And so we've been very fortunate. We just landed first contracts at the University of New Mexico in New Mexico State for about 2,500 workers. I'm right now helping lead negotiations for 3,800 graduate workers at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. We're expecting another group of about 1,500 fellows to unionize with us there here shortly when we get a labor board unit certification. And then We earlier this month had a unit of over 3,000 graduate workers at Northwestern University outside Chicago vote 93% to join UE. And today, as we speak, there are two elections going on, one at Johns Hopkins and another one in Baltimore and the other at the University of Chicago, each with 3,000 plus additional graduate workers who are all voting to join UE. And they're helping organize each other. This is back to the basics of the labor movement from the 1930s, when the CIO was organized. My union was not organized by a bunch of professional organizers coming in. It was organized by the workers in those workplaces who built really strong unions and built unions they were proud of. They were their unions, right? It totally changes the sense of what your union is about when you are able to organize it yourself and you're not reliant on somebody higher up the bureaucracy who's making a lot of the key decisions. So we're giving that power to the workers to organize themselves and take it in the direction they need to meet their needs and giving them the backing they need as they do it and the training and the framework, but they're taking it and running with it. It's just tremendous.
Yeah, it's about empowering people. And look, you know, you're right. A lot of the younger people I talk to, they've watched their parents be ground down. They've watched their, you know, wages be suppressed. They've watched healthcare benefits get more expensive, retirement being eviscerated. They've watched them lose jobs. They've watched their parents' generation struggle in ways that they've decided, you know what? We're not going to do it. And good on them. It's about time. It's about time we stop. Well, it's about time we stop taking it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's where they're at. And, this is why I was referencing people who have come of age since the turn of the century. You know, it's not only that they aren't going to be as well off as their parents. They can see that their parents aren't as well off as their grandparents, because this has been going on since the 1980s, maybe even the late 70s, the end of Jimmy Carter, and then certainly full slam with Reagan and then, you know, Bush and Clinton and Bush. I mean, it just was continuous. And then, you know, Obama squandered his opportunity when he didn't go big in the recovery from the financial crash. And instead, we just bled for 8 years. And then we got Trump, you know, because of that, and bled some more. You know, fortunately, enough folks learned enough lessons. We had some good fights during the course of the last decade that really challenged this income and wealth inequality. Fight for 15 and Occupy Wall Street, all of those things that I think helped create the conditions where, you know, we had at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, both parties were kind of forced to cough up some money that made a difference for working people. We didn't see that in 2008, unfortunately, but we did this time. And it really helped a lot of folks. And it also helped create the conditions where there's less job fear right now and therefore more willingness to organize. And that's important. We need to keep that going. Federal Reserve Board is bound and determined to break that if they can. That's what's going on with these interest rate hikes. They want to break the back of working people again. And we need to make noise and oppose it. And we need to change the system.
No, I'm right there with you. It's something we've got to do. So last question I've got, if someone wants to organize, they want to become a UE member, what do they do?
Go to our website, ueunion.org, and so it's ueunion.org. And there's a space on there where you can send in questions, concerns, and register that you're interested in organizing with us. I'd also encourage folks to reach out to the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee, EWOC, which is a joint project of UE and DSA. And they can also help you get started on figuring out how to improve conditions at your workplace. Even if you're not ready to organize a union yet, you can still start to talk to your fellow workers about what you can do to improve things there.
There you go. Carl, always great talking with you. Good seeing you, buddy. Keep up the great work. I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
Will do. Looking forward to it. Take care, Rick. Thanks.
Good job. Congrats on the organizing. And look, you know, this call for public ownership of rails. I want to hear your thoughts. Is this a good idea, bad idea? Should we reclaim the rails? Should we reclaim the commons, our water, our sewer, our roads, our bridges, our parking authorities, all of the things we've surrendered over the last several decades? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
A couple emails from folks losing their mind over the idea of reclaiming the rails for the public. I'm not opposed to the idea. Look, it's a monopoly. You've got one set of rails. It's not like you can have competing companies on those rails. And you look at the fact that, you know, it's a monopoly. They've got this kind of outweighted power to do whatever they want. And the contract fight last year was one of those things that, you know, was infuriating to me, because that was an opportunity to make lives better. And I think Democrats fell down on the job. And it wasn't all their fault. There were some problems all around on the messaging. But if you've got the president's ear, and this is where I give Biden, you know, some slack, because there are voices competing on both sides. There's the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. No, we can't get too far because, you know, we need corporate America to not go totally on the side of the Republicans. Even though Republicans are kicking corporate America around a little bit, it's an interesting moment. And you've got the more progressive folks who are saying, look, we've got to make lives better. We got to do some stuff. You know, there was a moment where you could have gone, look, there was a compromise point. Because it wasn't like the railroads couldn't afford to provide sick days for those workers. It's not like they couldn't hire a couple more railroaders. It's not like they couldn't make some adjustments to their precision scheduling railroading. It's not like they couldn't. They didn't want to. And this is the problem with what's going on in our society today. You got all these corporations who are making huge amounts of profit. They could make lives better. They don't want to. They want to buy back their shares of stock. You know, when these big companies, you know, go on these stock buyback programs, the railroads are a perfect example. Billions of dollars in stock buybacks. You know what those stock buybacks represent? Wages that didn't get paid to those workers. Sick days that didn't get paid to those workers. The jobs that have been crushed over the last several decades. When I was a kid, and I remember this, and this is going back a while, there were like 10 guys on a train. You had a couple people sitting in the caboose. You had a couple people, you know, walk in the middle. You had a couple people in the front. There were a lot of people on the train because they used to, used to yell at us when we used to jump on and off of them. Now you got two. They want to go down to one. So all of those salaries, all those benefits, all that stuff, where'd that go? It went to the shareholders. It went to the wealthy. It went to the CEO. It went to stock buybacks. And then they make these trains miles long. I go into rail yards often. When a train comes in and it's crossing the road, you're sitting for a while. Because they're miles long.
Light the lamp.
All the way down, he scores! A 200-foot empty net goal for the captain.
And defend the ice.
Driving in, centering pass. Oh, great sliding left pad save.
This is America's college hockey capital.
Fire one towards the net and scores.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
When a student lacks basic needs like food, clothing, and learning materials, attending school can be a challenge.
And that can make it impossible to thrive.
At Communities in Schools, we address this issue by ensuring that students have everything they need to re-engage in learning,
access to technology and school supplies,
and even emotional support.
By bringing communities of support to students, we're achieving equitable learning conditions.
And that's what Communities in Schools is all about.
Learn more at communitiesinschools.org.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes, and even got shot, but I'm not a criminal.
That's right. I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's Youth Advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
I lived alone and was having problems with my landlord. He's a creep. One night I'm watching TV and I hear my landlord letting himself in. Hey, get out. You can't keep coming in.
I'm just here to fix your fridge and spend some time together.
Get out. I'm reporting you.
Don't make a federal case of it.
A federal case? Sexual harassment in housing is against federal law. If you are harassed, file a complaint with HUD. Go to hud.gov/fairhousing. If you fear for your safety, call 911. Fair Housing. The law is on your side. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
My friend Teddy almost set his house on fire. He used a counterfeit, you know, a fake wall charger. He had to go to the hospital.
My big sister Jenna's face turned bright red. She was just showing people online how to use a new cream. She still has the scars.
My brother's friend Billy had to jump off his motor scooter when it caught fire. He fell and got hit by a car. He broke his leg, blew his chances to play basketball in college.
My BFF Chloe was riding her bike and hit a ditch. Her helmet broke in two. Now, she has a brain injury.
There is a cost to buying cheap. Do you want to pay the price?
Real products are tested for safety. Protect yourself. Don't fall for fake products.
Visit ncpc.org/goforreal. Brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Lows around 2 above tonight under partly cloudy skies, southwest winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. A mix of clouds and sun tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 21. Partly cloudy again tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 10 above. Chance for snow Thursday with highs in the upper teens, cloudy skies Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 7 above.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
43-6460.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
This is Pat Wrightlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Legitimizing their screwballism and intentionally bringing the evil of bigotry, intolerance, and even fascism in from the fringe of politics to sit in the seat of power. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is shameful and it's dangerous. Evil swarms when so-called leaders meekly give permission for crazies to use the government power to rule over us.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday we spent a little time talking about the Nazi homeschool. Evidently now the story has broken that the Ohio Department of Education, they're investigating the what they're calling the openly anti-Semitic and racist Nazi homeschooling group with thousands of members across the country operating in Upper Sandusky, Ohio. And look, trust me, this is just the tip of the iceberg. The kind of underground organizing by these hate groups that's just now finally coming out and being exposed should scare all of us, you know, especially people who believe that public education is how we give people opportunity to grow and move this nation forward. Our folks don't want that. No. I'm here to share some thoughts on his most recent piece on what's going on in the Upper Buck School District. Because, look, the attack on public education is in full rage mode in school districts across the country. And it's no more visible than in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And here to share some thoughts on what that's going on, I've asked Cyril Michaleko to come talk with us. Cyril is the editor-in-chief over at the Bucks County Beacon. They got a new piece out on it titled, It Takes a Village, Expelling Right-Wing Extremism from Bucks County School Districts. Cyril, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
So what's going on? Let's start with the first question. What's going on? What's happening in your neck of the woods?
I mean, what we're seeing in Bucks County and specifically in Central Bucks School District, is what we're seeing across the country, unfortunately, which is just an all-out right-wing and I would say even Christian nationalist assault on public education. This is an organized, astroturf, national kind of campaign. And they've kind of like activated, you know, their little cells of, you know, extremist parents that want to just transform public education into this very narrow, conservative, Christian kind of factory, if you will, where they just want to reproduce kind of like, you know, little versions of themselves and impose their will on everyone else, right? So this is like, for example, you know, book banning has been one of the big issues.
Right.
And the thing is like, parents have the option to kind of like deny their kids access to certain books, right? But that's not good enough. Like they want to deny it for every single child and every single parent, you know, and the books that they're targeting, obviously, a lot of them are by LGBTQ writers, writers of color, or characters that represent these different communities.
Right. But what do you say, Cyril, to them who would, I know their response back is going to be, well, the other side is doing exactly what you're saying to us and we're just fighting back. I mean, because that's the response I get. They're ramming this down our throats and we don't want it. What do you say to that?
I mean, that's just, you know, I think you have to put this in like historical perspective. And this is just kind of like part of like a long historical backlash. One, against progress, right? And then two, against, you know, public education. And, you know, it dates back in, you know, this movement, this right-wing movement, they like to use the kind of the banner of like parental rights, right? And that's something that's been invoked like throughout history, starting with when the United States introduced compulsory education, you know, for kids, right? Parents were pissed off. They thought it was the government kind of taking away their authority. And so they were against that, right? And this parental rights movement, which has really just been like I said, like a right-wing and Christian backlash, you know, there's a thread that you can follow throughout history. So, you know, for example, you know, the Scopes trial, right? It was the parental rights movement that didn't want evolution taught in science class. They wanted biblical creationism, right? It was the parental rights movement again that reared its head in the 50s with the Supreme Court's Brown versus Board of Education decision. You know, it was the parental rights backlash against them saying that segregation was unconstitutional. So like the parental rights movement, time and again, has been on the wrong side of history. And that's just what we're seeing today. Like this whole Moms for Liberty kind of movement, it comes from this. Like it comes from this lineage.
Now, look, I'm a parental rights person. I don't want the government telling me what I have to do with my kids or any of that. But there's a point at which you go, I don't know, Nazi homeschooling? I think there's got to be something there. I think the kind of absolute extremism that we're seeing, I think there's got to be something there. I don't think that parental rights thing is absolute and unfettered. But I do believe in parental rights and how I want my kids educated. I think there's some fairness there. And this is where these right-wing groups, they grab a kernel of reality and they grab, you know, people like me who say, yeah, we should have that. And then they take it too far. And I think this is where this is going. It's taking us to this extreme with the goal, at least I think, of destroying public education so they can privatize and profitize.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of these people and the ones that are running for school boards are, you know, essentially arsonists that want to burn down the whole system from within and raise it. And like you said, in order to kind of like privatize education and push like charter schools, et cetera. But, you know, and again, like, you know, of course, like parents have rights and they have rights to send their kids to like private schools if they want to, but they can't like impose those, you know, their vision on everyone else. And what we're seeing, it's just like, it's, you know, it's not like radical things they're going after, right? They're going after teaching history, right? They're going after books. They're going after like teachers being able to have like discussions about history. And history's messy, right? It's complicated. You know, we're an imperfect nation striving for perfection and trying to kind of, you know, continue to progress and to get better. And I think like the danger is, you know, you have, you know, right-wing activists like Christopher Rufo that, you know, created this concept of like critical race theory. And he even admitted it himself. Like the whole idea of that is that to be some kind of like generalized smear and term in order for these parent groups, right, to use and throw at anytime they don't like something.
Sure. No, and look, it's all about the feeding the outrage candy. I get that. And scary things. There's a theory out there, and it's critical, and it's about race. So all three of those words are kind of buzzwords to get you kind of ramped up. I get that, because they do this masterfully. The right has always been good at feeding outrage candy to people. And it's our job to, you know, to kind of put it aside. But here's the thing, the question that I have, you know, how much of this is just a handful of crazy people who are these religious zealots, are Christian Sharia law folks, and how much of this is the rest of society, of the community, and how much traction are they really getting? Do you get any sense of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think they're a minority, but they're a loud minority, and they've been able to seize power, right, in these school boards. You know, and like, you know, in Central Bucks School District, you know, this is like an affluent Philadelphia, you know, suburb. It's not very rural by any means, right? And, you know, what you're seeing there is just like, one, this school board, you know, was able to seize power thanks in part to, you know, Paul Martino, who's like this right-wing venture capitalist who sunk over $700,000 into school board races across the state, right? Because he saw an opportunity. This, you know, dates back to like, you know, COVID and the outrage that that kind of, you know, fomented. So he saw this crisis as an opportunity, right? And that's why he was sinking these money into what turned out to be very extremist candidates. And so, for example, like I was trying to make the connection to like, you know, the Christian right and the Christian nationalism. You know, besides the Bucks County Beacon one, I should just mention, like, there's been great reporting, you know, by other journalists out here. WHYY's Emily Rizzo, USA Today's Network's Chris Olery, and the Inquirer's Maddie Hanna. So, you know, I think people should, if they want to find out more, they can turn to them as well as the Bucks County Beacon. But back to my original point is, you know, for example, the school board recently passed a library policy in order for parents to challenge books, right? But what they didn't tell everyone was that once that policy was passed, then they had to draft administrative regulations, right? In order for like staff and librarians and teachers and administrators to be able to apply that policy. You know, so they outsourced the drafting of this, of these administrative regulations to the Independence Law Center, which is the legal arm of the Pennsylvania Family Institute, right? And so the Pennsylvania Family Institute is a right-wing anti-LGBTQ Christian organization that back in March, and this is something that we reported on, started recruiting informants in public schools because, according to them, you know, teachers are proselytizing children into sexual and Marxist ideologies by using coercion and grooming techniques.
They're indoctrinating the children.
Yes. So it's like the John Birch Society meets QAnon with these people. And so these, so one, they outsourced the crafting of the library policy to this organization. And then two, when they got wind that this story was coming out by the USA Today Network's Chris Olry, they sent an email to district-wide email to all the parents to kind of preempt that and put their own spin on it. But what they didn't, so they tell the parents that, you know, yes, we contacted this Independence Law firm, which it's actually not called firm, it's called the Independence Law Center, but didn't provide the details about who they're affiliated with, because the devil's in the details. And I think a large swath of the parents, I would say a large majority of the parents, would probably be, at least have some concerns, right, with them kind of turning to this anti-LGBTQ law firm, this Christian law firm, to craft policies where local right-wing activist parents have been targeting LGBTQ books.
Yeah, because the Independence Center, Law Center, doesn't sound bad. Right. Until you find out what, you know, because this is what, again, the right does a masterful job of this. You know, the Center for, you know, the Love of Puppies. You know, and they at its core, some of the most anti-worker, anti-society, you know, anti-social behavior that you can find. Yet, again, under the couching under the terms of some kind of twisted religiosity. You know, I've got friends who are homeschooler folks who, you know, they tell me they're creating Christian warriors. And that kind of language is a little concerning because, you know, we talk about how much we don't want Sharia law, but yet we're seeing springing up around us that kind of extremism.
No, I mean, absolutely. And like you said, like, they take everything too far. And the latest scandal was like a librarian posted a quote by Eli Wiesel, a Holocaust survivor, Nobel Peace Prize winner, that says, "We must take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented." Now, according to the school district, this violated one of their other new policies, Policy 321, that kind of reaches towards neutrality in the schools and the classroom, right? So they forced this librarian to take this down, right, until like public, you know, outcry and backlash and then, you know, media scrutiny. And then, you know, what they did is like, so not only that, to make matters worse, a while back, they hired a PR firm, right, that they're spending $15,000 a month on to help launder their image. So now they have this PR firm that's trying to like spin all of these crazy extremist policies and actions that they're taking. And the firm, what they tried to say was that, you know, the using, of course, like the passive voice and trying to kind of like deflect responsibility from people who, you know, from the actual people who ordered this librarian to take it down, was that they wanted the quote like accompanied with the book, you know, that the quote came from. But the book, that the quote didn't come from an actual book, it was from his acceptance speech for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right.
And so like this.
I thought you were going to tell me they banned the book. That would have been spot on. So let me ask you this, because there are a lot of people listening going, okay, well, this is Bucks County, Pennsylvania. It's not my school district. This wouldn't happen in my backyard. Can't happen in my neck of the woods. How much of this stuff is spreading across the country, do you think? How much of what you're seeing is being replicated in other places?
It's everywhere. Honestly, it is everywhere. You know, Moms for Liberty are one of the big protagonists of this movement, right? And then you just, you know, look what's happening in Florida, right? You know, one with like Ron DeSantis and with his like don't say gay laws and just kind of like, you know, booting out. And we're going now towards like higher education. They like boarded out the board of trustees for like New College and replaced him with like Christopher Rufo, who I'd mentioned earlier, you know, and like a gaggle of, you know, his right wing, you know, fellow travelers. And even like, you know, with the book banning, I mean, it's huge now. And it, you know, they try to, again, they're trying to say these books are like grooming kids, but they're going after classics too. Like in Florida, in a school district, they took off the shelves, actually, Fahrenheit 451, right, by Ray Bradbury.
My producer, he actually did a piece not too long ago, a school district down, I think, York, down in the York area. They were banning a bunch of books, but Mein Kampf was still on the shelves. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where you go, okay, where is your priority? And again, Nazi homeschool. It's one of those things that's kind of frightening to me of where we're going. So I guess, you know, the last line of questioning, you know, what do we do? Because look, you know, here's the reality. I talk to parents and the issues that some of these groups use as that lightning rod. Like, you know, there was a school district that had a drag show, you know, in the classroom. And you know, I don't think that's the place for it. Not against drag shows, but in the classroom, not the place for it. But, you know, how do you deal with the parents who are going, look, you know, look what they've done. You know, I don't want this, but I don't want that, the extremism either. Is there somewhere in the middle ground here? Do you see any hope forward?
I don't, right? Like, I don't see how you're going to reach like a middle ground with a lot of these folks, right? Folks that are accusing librarians and teachers of being groomers because books are
Not them. Look, there's a point at which you got to leave them. You're never reaching the fives. But it's taking people like me who go, you know what? I don't want drag shows in the classroom. I'm told every day there's a drag show in the classroom. These are what these extremists are saying. Every day there's drag shows. In fact, they're forcing my children to come to school and drag. I don't want that. Is there an education process? Is there a way to go? That's not happening. Other than it's not happening in my school, and it's not. I asked my children. It's not happening.
I mean, I think there's a couple of things that we can do here. And, you know, one, we were talking about like banning books, which is happening, right? You know,
which even is like, stupid.
And you, I think you mentioned York County in Pennsylvania. Like, you know, they banned like I Am Rosa Parks, right? And it was just like this list. And it was like predominantly like African-American authors or subjects, topics. You know, what happened there is, and this was interesting, is that students organized against this and started, they went to school early and started protesting before school early. And it gained like international attention. And eventually the board, you know, because they were so shamed and disgraced, you know, had to reverse the ban. So
there's the answer right there. The young people are going to save us because, well, mom and dad are screwed up.
Yeah, and we're seeing that now happen in Central Bucks where students are getting involved. So, you know, we're seeing that happen. But on you know, on the flip side of that, you know, obviously, like, parents have to get involved and people need to vote in these local elections, right? And just kind of get like reasonable voices back into school boards. And what they have to do is just kind of like cut through the noise and, you know, social media and kind of like, you know, digital activism is fine, but you know, you really got to go door to door and talk to these folks,
talk to
your neighbors and organize them in that way.
Right there. Cyril, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. Hope folks will take a look at your most recent piece. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at it. It takes a village. to expel these right-wing extremists. We'll get links out, and you can check out BucksCountyBeacon.com. Cyril Michalico, appreciate the time, man.
Thanks again, Rick.
Thanks so much. Want to hear your thoughts. What are you hearing from your local schools? Do you see this kind of insanity in your local school, and are you okay with it? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1940, and Ida Mae Fuller received a check from the U.S. government. That check was for $22.54. It may seem like a small amount, but the check represented something much larger. It was the very first payment of Social Security. Ms. Fuller spent her working years as a teacher and then a legal secretary in Vermont. She paid into the new Social Security program for almost 3 years before she retired. One day, while running errands in Rutland, Vermont, she decided to stop at the Social Security office and find out more about the program. Ms. Fuller later recalled, "It wasn't that I expected anything, mind you, but I knew I'd been paying for something called Social Security, and I wanted to ask the people in Rutland about it." The office took her benefits claim and sent it to Washington, D.C. Ms. Fuller was the first in a batch of 1,000 claims forwarded to the Treasury Department for processing. She was 65 years old when she received her first check, and as good fortune would have it, Ida lived to see her 100th birthday. In the 35 years that followed, Ida received just under $23,000 in total Social Security benefits over the course of her retirement. In 2014, according to the Social Security Administration, over 59 million Americans will receive nearly $863 billion in benefits. Over the years, Social Security has been expanded to include people with severe disabilities and widows and orphans with survivor's benefits. Although politicians continue to squabble over the program and refuse to ensure its long-term solvency, Social Security remains one of the most significant programs enacted by the U.S. government for working people. In the aftermath of the 2008 Great Collapse on Wall Street that saw the retirement of millions of workers evaporate, Social Security continued, keeping upwards of 22 million seniors out of poverty. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. So, it's another one of these examples of people pointing their fingers saying, "I know you're cheating, I know, and then the three fingers pointing back at them. You know, the person screaming the loudest is generally the person who's, I don't know, doing what they're screaming about. I look at this place, The Villages, down in Florida. They're the ones who do the golf cart thing. They have their Trump golf cart, you know, parades. And I think they had the boat that sank, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was part of them as well. Evidently, fourth resident of The Villages has now admitted that they voted twice in the 2020 election. Didn't seem to help much, still lost. But it's one of these things where you go, you know, these four people out there going, "I know there are people voting twice. I know that." Yeah, they were looking at him in the mirror. Yeah, see how that works? They found him. They found him. They found the person cheating. Every morning they found that person looking back at him in the mirror. Why didn't they turn themselves in? And here's the thing. I actually got a response from someone who says, "But you said there's no voter fraud." I don't know where to go with that, other than they deliberately broke the law because they believed other people were, and now they think they're going to get away with it. It's stupid. I mean, wow. And again, this just to me is another one of those magnifying moments where you go,
as you go about your daily life, look closer. As you gather with family and friends, look closer. Right in your community, there are youth who don't have the home, warmth, and healing you have. So, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Tonight, 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed. And tomorrow, they will wake up surrounded by love. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in sites across America to help them fulfill the great promise of their lives. So, look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 90.